back to 32 Fans. I don't know. Is that how you normally open it? I'm not sure. I'm here with Alexander Chester, who's been ducking me all day. He was a coward who was afraid to come on mic and talk about how the Philadelphia Eagles are just much better than the Vikings, and the Vikings are never going to win the Super Bowl. I think we'll both agree on that. It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And you are, I don't respect you anymore because we should have done this at like the second the game ended. But, you know, who knows? When did you stop watching the game? Did you stop watching the game?
Yeah. After the Thielen pass was incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
It's after they scored to make it 38-7 that I stopped.
38-7. Yeah. Can you imagine stopping to watch? What's crazy, it's probably not the first time ever that you have needed to stop watching an NFC Championship game during the game. Like, correctly. Not like, oh, I'm mad or we're down by 14. Like, right? You probably quit the 41-0.
Well, this loss is worse than 41-0 because, and we'll get into this, but 41-0 started, the Giants get the ball, they go right down the field, score a touchdown. They kick off, the Vikings fumble the kickoff, the Giants recover, and they score on the first play from scrimmage. It's 14-0. Before the Vikings offense, which, you know, number one offense in the league, Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Dante Culpepper, before the offense steps on the field, it's 14-0. They drive right down the field, they throw it into the end zone to Chris Carter, and him and Jason Sehorn have like simultaneous possession, and Sehorn just rips it out of Carter's hands, interception, going back the other way. And at that point, it was clearly over. Right?
Yeah. And by the way, when you lose 41-0, like, who cares? You were going to lose 10 times out of 10, probably.
Yeah. But the difference this time is that it started perfectly. We went right down the field and scored. I mean, easily. The Eagles were the number one rush defense. They didn't have the Vikings' shortest run on the first drive was 3 yards on 3rd-and-2. I mean, they easily went down the field and scored. And then they stopped the Eagles. They got the ball back. You know, and then there was the pick six in the, history.
I was down on, I picked the Eagles to win, right? I was down
on. No, you did. You picked the Vikings to win.
Did I really?
Yeah.
Did I pick the points?
You picked the Eagles to cover. You picked the Vikings to win.
Okay. I legitimately didn't remember. But I did say the Eagles would dominate both lines of scrimmage. And that is what happened. But the second, Keenum was shaky for a lot of the Saints game. And the second Keenum threw the across the field pick six. You had to be really worried, not just because it's 7-7, but you're just like, oh yeah, Case Keenum's our quarterback. He's not so good.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I don't think this is a game that requires analysis.
No, I mean, you seem to be blaming on Bill Simmons-esque, like, super reverse jinx. The Vikings are cursed. When in reality, like, you lost to a team that's better than you.
No, okay, you can explain individual parts of this game in a vacuum, okay? You can the Eagles' home field advantage, very good. They have the best record at home since Doug Peterson became their coach. You can explain that part. You can explain the Eagles' defense as being better than perhaps we thought and being able to shut down the Vikings. You can explain these parts in a vacuum. You cannot explain the Vikings' defense, which was historically good, against an offense that wasn't like an average or below average. It was the worst offense in the NFL. They were 32nd in DVOA since Nick Foles took over. There is no way to explain, using analysis or strategy or anything like that, what happened to the Vikings' defense and the Eagles' offense. There's not.
Foles was not, was not really ready for the system, and that now finally he's
ready. Which system? This was the best defense in the league by far. This was a defense that shut down Aaron Rodgers, knocked him out of the game. This is a defense that played the number one team in the league, the Rams, and completely shut them down for the whole game, shut them out after the first drive. This is a defense that completely dominated. Who else did we play this year? We shut down everybody. I mean, what are you talking
about?
Listen,
I guess Peterson's just a great coach. He watched a lot of tape, realized that you could pick on Trey Wayans.
So
they picked on Trey Wayans.
Okay, so if your analysis
they were able to run the ball. They were able to run the ball on you guys.
If your analysis is that Nick Foles is literally the best quarterback in the history of football, right, and that Doug Peterson is literally the best coach, like, that's not analysis. Okay? Mm. They're not better than every single team in the league. And I've told you this, and I've been saying this as long as we've had this podcast. The Vikings only lose playoff games in one of two ways. They lose in a heartbreaker at the last second, or they lose in an utter humiliation. We don't lose games.
Do you realize every single player on the team is unaware of the 41-0 game?
On the Vikings, you're saying?
Yeah. They're unaware of how many Super Bowls the Vikings have been to and lost, most of the team, probably.
That's why it was only Case Keenum's third favorite moment of his life, and it was my first favorite moment. Because he's only been a Vikings fan for a year. I've been a Vikings fan for 40 years.
Nobody was on the 2000 Vikings and the 2017 Vikings.
Yes.
The coaches were different. The owner was different. Everything was different. You can't blame history. You lost having nothing to do with, ooh, the Vikings always do this.
Look,
it just happens to be that the same thing happened to you that you know, maybe has happened before.
But mathematically, right, let's look at this from a statistical mathematical odds perspective, right? What are the odds of this happening? First of all, what are the odds of losing six straight NFC Championship games in which you're favored? Even if it's an even game, it's a coin flip, right? Six coin flips is, what are we talking about? Like a 1 in 32? Or I can't do the math off the top of my head.
No, more
let
than
alone.
That.
Do I really believe in fate and all that kind of mishigas? No, but there's no other explanation. It's the Vikings are the Vikings, and this is what the Vikings do. And what is it? The jerseys? Is it the? I don't know what it is. Because you're right. Everything about the team has changed, and yet it's the same outcome time after time after time. And there's no analysis. Again, we can analyze how the Eagles eat. We can't. There's nothing to say about Nick Foles all of a sudden becoming the best quarterback in history. Kerry Collins did the exact same thing in 2000. He had 300 yards and 4 touchdowns, and they destroyed the Vikings, and they went into the Super Bowl, and all the Giants fans were like, oh, look how good we are. We're really the best team. And what happened? They lost 34-7. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying the Eagles fans should, like, you know, the Eagles should be very happy they won. Of course, you should be happy you won, and they should be very hopeful because anything can happen. I mean, we saw a mediocre 9-7 Giants team win 2 Super Bowls, and, you know, they beat the best team in history. Like, anything can happen. The Eagles could win the Super Bowl. And, like, so, look, the Eagles, like, celebrating is a good thing. What I won't tolerate is the Eagles giving themselves undue credit. And, like, to use the Giants as another example, the Giants beating Eli beating the Patriots, Giants fans should celebrate. Yay! And that's a good response. You know what's not a good response? Oh, Eli's the better quarterback than Tom Brady. Eli's better quarterback than Peyton Manning. That is a bad response. Okay? So to argue that the Eagles are all...
I don't even know what you're talking about
anymore. I'm just saying the Eagles are not a good team. If they had Carson Wentz, they might be a very good team, and they might be a team that legitimately was the best team in the league and deserved to win the Super Bowl. That's not what they are. They benefited from playing the Vikings. Okay? If you took Mike Zimmer and all those players and put any other uniform on them, is it possible the Eagles win the game? Sure. Is it possible Nick Foles has 350 yards and they lose 38-7? No, that's not possible. It's just not.
Okay. Over under half plays that Chester watches during the Patriots Eagles Super Bowl.
Under.
You're not going to watch the play.
No, I never watch Super Bowls when the Vikings lose the NFC Championship game. I don't.
I mean, what are you going to do? Are you invited to any Super Bowl parties?
Yeah. Well, okay, hold on. Here's the crazy part, by the way.
You could be in the kitchen and like with the people who don't watch.
Yeah. Well, but I don't want to be around. Like, you know, this is going to explain to you like how much this loss hurt, and I'm trying to figure out where it places on like the all-time worst Vikings losses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't do it right away.
I would rather have lost this Super Bowl than won next year's Super Bowl. Okay, I thought about it for a long time. I would rather lose this, and I'm saying this as a fan of a team that's never won. We're not the Patriots who have a bunch in the bank. I would rather have lost this Super Bowl this year than win next year. I'd rather lose this year than win the next two. Okay, like you have
because
to
it's a home because it's a home Super Bowl.
Yeah, you have to understand something about Minnesotans. Like, there's this obsession in Minnesota. Minnesotans have, like, this... I don't know if it's an inferiority complex or what, but Minnesotans are obsessed with, like, what the rest of the country thinks about them.
Mm.
And I definitely manifest this for sure.
I mean, the answer is we don't. We don't think about them at all.
But, and so, like, every single year in the Super Bowl, I'm just so sad and jealous of some random-ass team with no fans, like the Carolina Panthers or the Atlanta Falcons or some franchise with no history, no legacy, no nothing, no, like you know, 20 Hall of Famers that, like, shows up in the Super Bowl, and for 2 weeks the whole country's talking about them, and random celebrities are on E! Predicting their games and talking about their players, and, like, I've desperately wanted that for my team. All I wanted was to get to a Super Bowl. That's all I wanted. And I said, like, asked me last week.
That's all I want, too. It's literally all I want.
I just want to get there.
And that's to, like, finish up writing my biathlon preview. Yeah. Those are the only two things I want.
So that's number one. Number two, because the game was going to be in Minnesota, that's what made it. I don't want to go to Jacksonville or Houston for a Super Bowl. I really don't. I wanted to go home. I wanted to sleep in my bed. I wanted to, like, that was going to be special. Mm-hmm. Even if we lose to the Patriots, we were.
Oh,
we
yeah. My, the by only... the way, my neighbor wants to go. Can he sleep in your child? Can he, like, borrow your house?
Yeah, is he an Eagles fan?
Yeah, he's an Eagles fan.
Yeah, it's $1,000 a night.
Okay. I'll let him know.
But, you know, my dad said to me, sadly, like, he's like, you know, and it's true, like, he will die before the Vikings host another Super Bowl, you know?
Host? I mean, they will never host another Super Bowl, probably.
Well, no, they host...
You get one for building a stadium, but they're not going back to Minnesota. It's never happening.
No, well, that's what I'm saying. They'll host another Super Bowl in 40 years when they get their next stadium.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. Oh, maybe 40, 50 years. Maybe.
Well, no, of course they do. Yeah, they give every new stadium a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but maybe the stadium will last 60, 70 years.
I mean, that doesn't happen, so.
There's no stadiums that have lasted 60 years?
Wrigley and Fenway, but no. Stadiums, no. The way that
Okay. Yeah, no, but the point stands, yes.
Yeah, yes. The Vikings will, the next, yes. So that's why.
I mean, Vikings fans have to be worried that they're never going to see a Super Bowl in any stadium. Forget who cares about the home stadium.
I understand all that, but I'm saying, but this was the extra special part of it, and this is why it's so extra painful. More so, I posted on Facebook there, and I'm interested to see, like, there's been really strong arguments on both sides. I think it's probably 60-40 in favor of the heartbreak being worse. But there's a debate. Which is the worst loss? The heart, like the last second.
No,
loss?
The heartbreak is worse. I don't know. I don't even think it's a debate. The blowout, because when the blowout happens, you know you didn't deserve it. If you get blown out in a game, but chances are you would have lost 90% of the time at least.
If you're talking about a blowout in which you come in as 12-point underdogs, and that's, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a game where you're the favorite to win. You're like the Vikings in 2000. The Vikings.
Do you think
this
the
year.
Vikings win yesterday's game 3 or 4 out of 10 times?
No, they win. If it's not the Vikings, they win 8 out of 10 times. There's a reason they were 3.5 point favorites on the road.
I don't
want to
hear not the Vikings. That's that don't make
Akiva. They were 3.5 point favorites on the road.
He's
they
really
were bigger
mad
favorites
with
his than money. No, they were bigger favorites than the Patriots were. Like I don't. You picked the Vikings to win. Like, what are you talking about? You bet on it.
Not to cover.
That's true. You know, if this game was in Minnesota again, the Vikings would have been 9.5 or 10 point favorites.
Listen, I feel bad. I was rooting for you guys, but it's a bad matchup for you. I think. The Vikings could have been the best team in the NFL, but for whatever reason, the Eagles are a bad matchup for them.
Why?
Especially because their front seven right now seems to be unblockable.
I'm not talking about that aspect of the game. The Vikings scored 7 points. That's not enough to win. Although, you know, they went for it on fourth down multiple times.
I mean, your right tackle's a turnstile.
We're not talking about any of that, Akiva. We're talking about the Vikings defense and the Eagles offense. That was the story of this game. Okay. Explain that. Use your analysis.
To Foles. You couldn't get near him, so he threw for a zillion yards.
Okay. They did not get a lot of pressure on Drew Brees last week.
By the way, this wasn't a game. At the end, there were some bounces that didn't go your way, but this wasn't a game where, like, a million bounces didn't go your way. Like, Torrey Smith could have easily caught that first touchdown also.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, he is Torrey Smith.
In the second half, Nick Foles literally had the greatest QBR in history of that stat. He is not the greatest quarterback in history, and the Vikings defense is not the worst defense in history.
Well, listen, Nick Foles, who has a 28-touchdown, 2-interception season, has greatness in him.
This was way better than he ever was in that season, and against a better defense. There's no explanation. There's no analysis. Again, I can understand arguments about the Eagles defense and the Vikings offense and Case Keenum. That half of the field, fine. But that's not what decided this game. So anyway.
Okay, I'm going to give you three options for next week's podcast because, nothing to talk about. Maybe we could we predict the Super Bowl winner, but we don't need to get into, like, deep analysis of this game you're not going to watch. I'm going to give you three options, okay?
Okay.
A listener of the podcast is friends with a Orthodox Jewish guy going to the Olympics, and we'll try and set up an interview with him to talk about.
When you say going to the Olympics, you mean he's on Team USA. He's not going as a spectator.
Team Israel, yeah. He's an American, but he's not, you know. Not good enough.
Wait, he's on Team Israel? Wait, I thought he was on Team USA.
No.
Oh, okay.
He's not going as a fan. Yeah, we could get lots of people going as fans.
Well, you said going. So.
Okay, yeah. He's attending. He wants to go, you know. So we could have an Olympian on, talk to him about that. I don't think he does his sport on Shabbat, so, like, that's really interesting. Number two, we can watch the Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl from 15 years ago and, like, analyze that like it just happened. Or number three, we can do a Royal Rumble review.
Yeah, let's go with the Olympic guy.
Yeah? What if I said you have to pick 2 out of 3?
Well, then we'll do the Royal Rumble thing.
Okay, so you don't want to rewatch the Patriots-Eagles
Super
Bowl.
No, I'm not.
Now, last year, remember, I'm dedicated to the listeners. I wanted to rewatch every Super Bowl.
Yes, you did.
To rank them. And you were not willing to do that because you had more charts to make. I mean,
we did. Well, we ranked the last 20, but yeah.
Yeah, we ranked the last 20. We didn't rewatch them, but we did rank them.
Yeah.
We go to, like, a kid's, like, pre-Super Bowl party, and I'm like the football DJ. So I put on old Super Bowl. So I'm going to put on the Pats Eagles game there.
Yeah.
I
thought I was going to shock you with the hot take of the fact that I'd rather lose the Super Bowl this year than win.
No,
another.
I get it. I get it. I totally get it.
I got another hot take for you. And this is a complete flip-flop of what I said last week and what I've been saying for a while.
Uh-huh.
I'm rooting for the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I get it. Listen, the Eagles have not, like, the Super Bowl, you know, 2 weeks of mania has only been one day old. Eagles fans have not acquitted themselves well. I mean, they have if you like content, like if you like insanity.
Like, to be serious for a minute, like, and I like to joke and I compare, like, you know, evil teams to ISIS and Hitler and all that. But like, what the Eagles fans did last night, from multiple friends of mine who were at the game, it boggles the mind in how disgusting it was. And to be clear, I'm not talking about before the game or during the game or after a game in which the Eagles lost and are heartbroken and are bitter at the Vikings. I'm talking about in the parking lot after they won 38-7, the Vikings did not show up in the game. The Vikings were a non-entity. The Eagles beat nobody. Ignore the Vikings. The Vikings are a meaningless irrelevancy to you. And yet, multiple friends of mine were attacked, had things thrown at them. One of them had an anti-Semitic slur attacked at him because he was wearing a yarmulke because he's a rabbi. Like, I heard, like, children being punched. It's like the Eagles fans are – and I've always defended Eagles fans. I've always thought the Santa Claus stuff is overrated. I lived in Philly. I like the city of Philly. I've always felt
that
bad
was the only thing
Philly.
I liked about them. You got to Santa. He's fake.
No, but I've always been sympathetic to Philly because I thought it was similar to Minnesota. Like, again, the Eagles are like the Vikings. They're always good and they never win. And like, but like they acted so disgusting. Like, Boston fans are disgusting in a different way, but like they don't like attack children and curse. I mean, like, and like curse out rabbis. Like, that's it. I'm rooting for the Patriots. As disgusting as that is to do, at least they're not like, you know.
If Eagles fans have not really acquitted themselves well. They have a lot of like diehard fans, but they also, you know, they certainly have the most like trash human fans of any team in the NFL.
It's shocking. It's shocking how trashy they are. Like, it's really, it boggles the mind.
I wonder if it would change if they became winners though, because their whole thing is just like, we suck and we're pathetic and we've never won. If they win this game,
if you're a bad person, you're a bad person. Did Boston fans become better when they started winning everything?
No, they became insufferable. You know, but they're not bad. Boston fans wouldn't beat up the other team. They wouldn't even realize they were there, the other team's fans.
Well, that's what you should do. Like, again, if the Vikings had won the game, I would fully expect some bitter Eagles fans to, like, be punching Vikings fans in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. But the Eagles, like, why are the Eagles even – it's not like the Vikings are a big rival of the Eagles. Like, who cares?
No, not at all.
It really
is. So, yeah, that's wild.
Yeah,
people were like yelling at babies and cursing at babies. Yeah,
the Eagles are
horrible. Bring your baby. By the way, if you bring your baby to an Eagles playoff game, then you're a moron.
Yeah, but I was defending Philly. I thought like that it was overrated, like the what the trash people talk about Eagles fans, and you know I was wrong. Yeah, but anyway, so yeah, I have updated my worst Vikings losses ever chart, and this one is shockingly high.
Where is it?
I'm torn. It's either number two or number three.
Well, it's not never going to be above Gary Anderson. That would be absurd.
Gary Anderson's number one.
Yeah.
Here's okay.
It's worse than 41-0 for sure.
Well, it's worse than 41-0 because of the first two drives, right?
I think it's worse than Seattle just because it's a more meaningful game.
Oh, it's 1,000 times. Seattle's not even in the top five. Seattle's number seven.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, like, again, the way what I judge is, was this team going to go to the Super Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why the top three the top four in my life, like, and this is, by the way, I'm only talking about like in the last 20 years, like the Darren Nelson game in 1987, I didn't watch that. So that doesn't count. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know, Darren Nelson dropped a touchdown on the last play of the game at Washington in the NFC Championship game. They lost 17-10. And then obviously Washington cruised in that Super Bowl. So to me, it's like, did this cost us a chance to go to the Super Bowl? And so Gary Anderson game is number one because that team was historically great. And my question is, like, was this team better than the Brett Favre team? I think they were pretty similar, but
different league that year.
Yeah, but the difference then was, of course, we weren't going to play the Super Bowl at home, obviously. But then, of course, the difference is that in that game, right before the interception, as they crossed midfield before they had the 12 men on the field, the penalty to go back 5 yards, I said out loud, I actually said these words: I can't believe we're actually going to go to the Super Bowl. So I got further.
Yeah, no, that has
to
be it. You know what? Because you almost won that game, and you didn't almost win this game. That has to be above this. Has to.
Yeah. So I think this one's third. Three. This is definitely worse than 41-0 because this team was better. Like the 41-0 game, even if we win that game, we have to play Baltimore, who's a phenomenal team in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they would have absolutely destroyed you.
I mean, the Vikings were a good team there. They were 11-2 before Culpepper got injured, you know, to end the regular season. But this is worse than 41-0 again because the first 5 minutes were perfect. It was just like the Saints game. Touchdown, stop. You know, it looked like we were going to cruise again. So, yeah, this is the third worst loss.
Were you on, like, StubHub looking at Super Bowl tickets?
Okay, so that's another thing. My dad, which I'm pretty annoyed with him, Saturday night, he's frantic that we have to buy tickets now, Saturday night. We have to buy them now because the price is going to go up after the Vikings win the next day, and so let's buy them now. And worst case scenario, we can sell them if the Vikings lose. So I spoke to a bunch of my friends who are ticket brokers, and they told me the market was already priced, assuming Vikings-Patriots.
Yeah.
So the price would only go down if it wasn't Vikings or it wasn't Patriots.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so I convinced him not to. But like my dad is like so heartbroken today, and I said to him, like, how did you fall for this? Like, you've seen the four Super Bowl losses. You've seen the Hail Mary game. You've seen the Darren Nelson game, in addition to everything I've seen. How did you fall for it? And he said, well, I thought with Zimmer everything was different. And to be honest, I thought everything was different because of what happened last week. I thought, well, this is just a team of destiny and all that other bullshit that doesn't really exist. But I wish, in hindsight, last week had never happened. Now, it's not a positive memory. It's a negative memory.
No, I think that long term, you'll remember that Diggs play and you'll go back next year.
I'll remember that Diggs play and then think what happened the next week. Oh, yeah, we lost. And I know the Immaculate Reception team didn't win the Super Bowl that year, but they won four Super Bowls in that decade.
Right. Well, so maybe you'll win four in the decade. The real problem is that the Eagles are going to be so good next year with Wentz.
Yeah, I listened to this podcast on The Ringer, their NFL podcast last week, and they were discussing if there were zero injuries in the NFL, like what would happen different this year?
Mm-hmm.
So they said the NFC would have been the same two teams because, you know, the Vikings, you had Dalvin Cook and Sam Bradford, and the Eagles, you had Carson Wentz.
Right. What's amazing is that the two best teams had very catastrophic.
Yeah, but Seattle, if their defense is healthy, they would have been better, obviously.
Right. The Packers, Aaron Rodgers is the best.
Yeah, the Packers obviously would have been better.
Yeah.
And then in the AFC, obviously Jacksonville doesn't get there because they're probably not going to win the division if Andrew Luck's healthy and if Houston, if Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt and everybody's healthy.
Not sure.
Sorry, that's the wrong division.
But it's possible.
No, that's the right division. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. No.
Anyway. So. Whatever. I hate sports. And
I have not seen the line for this game, so I can actually guess the spread. I have not seen it all day. I haven't come close to it. I like Adam Schefter. He's like, all right, big storylines. Chris Long playing against the sports team. Yeah, that's an important thing.
Yeah.
That's like only
long-time I've seen Patriot.
Like, the only things that Adam Schefter and Rich Eisen care about are like, what are the storylines? Like, they're essentially employees of the NFL. Rich Eisen literally is, but so are all those guys like Schefter.
Yeah.
At least have great takes like Mike Lombardi where it's really important that the Patriots have the lead in the first quarter because you want Blake Bortles to play from behind.
Yeah.
Truly one of the great tweets of all time.
Got to score more points to win the game. That is a very genius take of his.
So I'm going to – I really have no idea. I've seen zero reference to the line.
Okay, so guess it. And by the way, I guessed it live last night to Steen and Benny Michelle who were watching the game with me. And they thought I was too low, but it turns out I was actually right.
I'm going to say pass -3.
All right, so I said 6, which it is.
Wow.
I've seen it 5.5, 6, 6.5. I've seen 5.
I mean, I bet like anything on the Eagles at +6.
I think you're just, again, if it's Carson Wentz, it's a different, you are making the same mistake Eagles fans are. You are thinking, oh, Nick Foles is actually a good player.
Okay, here's the deal. Bill Simmons actually had a really good point all season, which was that they didn't send Gronk over the middle once the whole year because they really didn't need to.
They were saving him. He's injured.
Yeah, and then they thought they could I think in his heart of hearts, Belichick thought that he had a chance that he would save all his trick plays, of which he called a bunch in the second half, for the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
By the way, the idea of a team like taking it easy the whole season and going 13-3 and then having easy playoff games is like vomit-inducing.
I mean, it's your division that's the cause of all this.
No, I understand. Like, if we weren't totally inept and the Dolphins and Bills weren't inept,
for a decade,
we wouldn't have to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, for more. 2 decades at this point. So, you know, he breaks out the trick plays. Gronk has to go over the middle in a couple key situations and gets destroyed twice. You know, the second one obviously gives him a concussion. I also thought that Brady took a couple hits that Brady hates getting hit at this point. All the old QBs hate getting hit.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's 40.
Brady gets so annoyed. Like, and he will try and, like, just slide down to not get hit. But, you know, it doesn't always work that way. I think the Eagles are going to just, like, clock him. I think they're going to have a lot of problems blocking the Eagles front seven. And I'm going to say right now, 13 days before the game, I'm picking the Eagles to win the Super Bowl.
Wow. Okay. So.
I think Foles thinks. I'm not saying Foles is great. Wow. But I think they're going to be able to get guys open against the Patriots. Like, the Patriots got so many bounces in that game. I mean, they got the worst bounce also. Like,
the Patriots are not impressed, but nobody has this year. I think the Eagles are with Foles, without Wentz, the Eagles are significantly worse than the Vikings. They're worse than the Saints. They're worse than the Rams. They're probably around similar to Carolina. They're worse than Seattle if their defense is healthy. They're worse than Green Bay. Like, losing Wentz is a big loss, and the Eagles have sucked, except for yesterday, which I'm not counting because I'm sorry. there's no logical world in which the greatest defense on third down in 40 years gives up 10 to 12, 10 out of 12 on third downs to Nick Foles. Like, I think that was a mulligan. I just think that was the Vikings being the Vikings. And I there's no analysis from that. My analysis on Nick Foles is the previous six games or five games, whatever, when he was garbage. So I think I'm, you know, could it happen? Yeah, look, we saw the 17-0 Patriots lose, so anything's possible, but whatever. Ugh. Yeah, ugh indeed. Let's have a palate cleanser. Can we have a palate cleanser?
Okay, yeah, what's that?
All right, can we talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame? We do that every year.
Oh, yeah. Is this our last chance to do that, though?
Yeah, they're coming out on, don't they announce it tomorrow?
No, I think it's Monday.
Oh, next Monday. Okay.
But yeah, well, let's talk about it.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let's
skip. I had
all
such a great song lined up for the Vikings won, but
yeah.
I was the only thing I was happy about is I have so many tabs like on the side that I'm like out of space.
Yeah.
I was happy to be able to delete it, but other than that I you know.
Well, you'll never have to play that song for that purpose, so you can just say what it is anyway.
No, I'll save it because I think next year you guys will have another heartbreaking loss in the NFC Championship game. All right, so Baseball of Fame. You tell me what you think should happen, and then I'll tell you what will happen based on.
I don't like to say what should happen. I don't like to say what I think will happen. I like to say what should happen. So I will give you, and I'm excluding all the first year guys on the ballot who are obviously not making the Hall of Fame. Royals,
yes,
well, you know,
exclude those guys.
Okay, there are 20 guys on this ballot who are worthy of a conversation. So I will list them in what is my opinion how they should be ranked from 20 to 1, and then you'll tell me if I'm right or wrong or whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Number 20 is Andy Pettit. He's fine. Whatever. He's not a Hall of Famer.
Well, Pettit's problem is. Pettit's problem is, what's it called? That he has an actual steroids accusation, right?
Yeah, but nobody seemed to ever care about that.
No, I mean, I think the voters definitely do care about it.
All right, okay, so whatever. He's a no anyways. Number 19 to me is Omar Vizquel. I understand that he was very good defensively, but he was so
bad.
Pettit's
not even on the ballot this year. What are you talking about?
He's not?
No.
Wait, why is he not on the ballot? He retired 5 years ago.
No, what are you, like, make up your own chart? You're not looking at a real chart?
No, I'm not looking at an actual ballot. No,
that's insane. Okay, like, forget about Andy Pettit's not on the ballot, you moron.
Oh, hold on. I'm looking at 2019. Sorry. Abort mission.
Okay. Jeez.
Yeah. Okay. Cause yeah, okay. I am looking at my own chart, but I was in the wrong tab. Okay, 2018. Okay.
Oh
my God. All right. So the guys we're not mentioning are Bobby Abreu, Jamie Moyer, Johnny Damon, Chris Carpenter, Carlos Zambrano.
Okay, yeah, we're not mentioning them. Okay.
All right. Number 19 is the same guy, Omar Vizquel.
So you think he is a Hall of Famer?
No,
you're not gonna
I think
lose
he's
any
not
sleep.
A Hall of, no, he's not a Hall of Famer.
Oh, okay, so how many Hall of Famers do you say there are, 12 or 14?
No, there's 19 guys who are debatable, who you could at least make an argument.
And how many people are you putting in or you're not saying yet?
Well, I'm not saying yet, but Omar Vizquel.
Okay, Omar Vizquel is doing incredibly well in his first ballot, 30.5%, which means that – it doesn't mean that he will definitely get in – but it means that he will get a very long look in the next few years.
Don't you think he's the kind of guy who the yeses, I mean the noes, are not going to be convertible, though?
Yeah, I do think that he's getting the old school yeses for the most part. I do think the ballot is about to unclutter, especially if four get in this year. And it's already started to unclutter. This is the least cluttered the ballot's been in many years.
Yeah, I mean, next year, the only guys we add are Andy Pettit, obviously. But the only guys we add who are really going to, you know, are competitor are Mariano Rivera and Roy Halladay.
Right. Well, yeah. I don't know about Halladay. Obviously, Rivera is going to be on every ballot.
Yeah, Halladay is going to make it.
All right, so who's 18? Vizquel's a no for me.
Okay, so Vizquel's a no to me. You know, his 82 OPS plus is just, you know, he was so bad offensively.
Right, he's Ozzie Smith, but he's not. He's like the homeless Ozzie Smith.
Yeah, and his war, he has 45 war. Like, so you can't say his defense is good enough. Like, there's guys every year who have a 650 OPS and get 6 or 7 war because their defense is elite. And Omar Vizquel's defense, you know, for whatever. Okay, number 18 to me, he will make it this year, obviously. But to me, he should not. Although on my ballot, everybody left my ballot. If they made it, I wouldn't throw a big fuss. But I don't think he should make it as Trevor Hoffman.
Hoffman is, you know, he missed by the slimmest of margins last year. He's only at 77%. Just under half the ballot is revealed. Obviously, the half of the ballot that reveals are the half that has the internet. You know, the half that that
and the other half is counting his saves, and that's all they care about.
The other half loves saves. The other, like, there are most guys, because the guys who reveal their votes are much more likely to vote for 10 people. The average vote per revealed ballot is 8.86 votes.
Yeah. And per non-revealed ballot, it's
everyone,
like 3.5
everyone
who's
voting
something.
Is voting for 10, basically.
Yeah.
The non-revealers vote for way less than that. Yeah. But the only guys who do better are Hoffman, for a long time Jack Morris, but when he was eligible.
Yeah.
It's really just closers and like random white guys they like.
Yeah. All right, number 17 to me is Sammy Sosa. You know, and we discussed all these guys last year, but he had one skill, which was hitting for power, and he wasn't even that great at it. His career OPS plus is 128, you know, which is not great.
Yeah, Sosa's never going to come close, and he's also never going to fall off the ballot. Yeah. He's the least interesting guy on the ballot because he's at 11%. Yeah. He'll never get below 5, and he'll never get above, like, you know, 30. So
yeah, but his offense was is equal to Bobby Abreu's, by the way. But Bobby Abreu's... Yeah.
Sosa will probably get in on some sort of a veterans ballot at some point.
And by the way, Sammy Sosa has fewer career WAR than Bobby Abreu also. Now, Abreu was more of an all-around player, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, look, Sosa hit home runs on steroids, but that's all he did. And then he mm-hmm. colored his face in, like, a weird Michael Jackson thing. All right, number 16 to me, Billy Wagner. Will never get in, should get in. If he's better than Hoffman in every single respect. We discussed this last year.
Yeah, he's getting no support. He's already in year 3 at 10%. Which means that, you know, I do think when Hoffman's gone, he will get a massive bump next year if Hoffman gets in, which he
No, he's
will.
Never going to make it.
No, he's going to get a big bump, but yeah, he's never going to close to getting it.
There's not a single way that you can argue that Trevor Hoffman is better than Billy Wagner, except for the fact that
he's going to get that 10th spot on people's ballots who don't want to, you know, who have nobody else to put in because he's innocuous enough.
Number 15 to me, Fred McGriff. Again, you want to put him in, that's fine. I don't care. Yeah. But
I mean, he's at 17% in his last year. Everyone jumps a lot in their 10th year, but obviously he's not jumping past like 30%.
Yep. Next in his last year, Edgar Martinez. I have him at 14.
No, he's in his second to last year.
Or ninth year. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, he's in his ninth year. Yeah. I have him at number 14. A lot of the new school guys, the guys you and I usually subscribe to, think that he's automatic and are incensed that he's not. But to me, the problem is that And look, he played his whole career in Seattle, so obviously his offensive numbers were deflated a little, which is reflected by his OPS plus is 147.
I mean, I've made this comment I made it 2 years ago also. Like, Edgar, he shouldn't be blamed for, like, OPSing 1,400 in AAA for 5 years and not getting called up. Like, well, his career is very short, because he was raking.
But that's the bottom line. But that's to me, the issue. He didn't play long enough. And, you know, there's a lot of hitters with WARs in the 60s. And you know, so to me, Edgar's if he gets in, I would not have a problem with it. It's just I have 10 guys on my ballot ahead of him, so including number 13.
He had a 12-point difference between private and public ballots. He's at 79.8, which means he's got no chance once the other half come out. But I think he'll be on every public ballot next year. So I think it'll be very close. It'll actually be incredibly close because similar to what you said, but the opposite. About Trevor Hoffman, there are certain people who will never vote for a DH. So it's going to be he's never going to get like 80-something percent. I think he gets in by like the slimmest of margins next year.
By the way, ironically, the same people who will never vote for a DH are the people who have no problem voting for Trevor Hoffman in a 60.
Yeah, we understand. Everyone who's listening understands.
Yeah. All right, number 13 to me is a rookie on the ballot. Andrew Jones. What's your take on Andrew Jones?
Andrew Jones has enough votes to stay on.
No, hold on. I'm not talking about the votes. I'm talking about what do you think of it?
No, I know. Listen,
you think he's a Hall of Famer.
I'm just giving everyone. I do think Andrew Jones is a Hall of Famer. I think it was pretty universal that he was like an immortal defensive center fielder in his prime. Yeah. I obviously, he could have aged much better. He ends with only 434 home runs, which is still top 50 all time. Like, let's not devalue that all the way.
His OPS plus is only 111. There's a lot of steroid talk about him.
But I don't think he gets hit by that. I don't think that's affecting his...
I mean, he had 50 home runs 1 year and then, like, disappeared.
He starts with a 3 WAR season. Then he goes 7, 7, 8, 5, 6, 5, 3, 6.7, 5.6. But listen, that's the Hall of Fame prime of many different Hall of Famers.
And then he's done at, like, what, age 31 or 32?
Age 30, he has his last decent season. He's never relevant from 31 on. And he's
so, first of all, he's clearly older than the... Like, there's no question that age is not accurate.
It's interesting. I mean, he was 19 when he made the majors.
Yeah, I remember talking to somebody, a Twins beat writer, around the time he became a free agent. Well, he must have been about 29, 30, 31, something like that. And the Twins were in the market for an outfielder. And I said, what about Andrew Jones? And I forget who it was. I can go back in my old Gmail archives and look. And he said to me, Andrew Jones is at least 2 years older than you think he is. And that's what people think in baseball.
That's very interesting. Now, I'm not finding anything about this online, but it makes sense because he was already raking when he was 20, and why
he was done when he was 30.
So washed up at 31, unless he was old. By the way, I should have mentioned this in the football portion of the show, but a loyal listener, Josh Cantor was in an email back and forth with, I'll say, a very buff referee. Yeah. He emails him from time to time.
Yeah.
And this buff referee, he asked him, you know, because people went crazy that the second the Patriots game ended yesterday, the ref, who was the ref? Was it Corrente? I forget who it was, of the Pats game. Ran over to Tom Brady and congratulated him. And people were like, wow, you know, Tom Brady's biggest supporter. Congratulate him. A lot of memes going around Twitter last night that, you know, the refs were in on it. As if, like, the refs care if the Patriots win or not. Yeah. This buff ref said that every game I've ever refereed in my entire lengthy career, I've congratulated the winning quarterback the second the game is over. I've never failed to do it once.
I didn't know they were still
breaking news. Huh? Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I forgot to tell you the environment in which I watched last night's game.
Oh, you told me, but tell the listeners.
I mean, Benny Michelle was, you know, our friend Ben Michelle was one of my friends who came to watch the game. He said, like, he just could not get over. He's like, I've never seen, what is this? Is this a championship game, like, party? It was like a Super Bowl party, but for the championship games. But nobody was watching the game, but everybody was a 70-year-old Jew.
Well, explain why did your mother-in-law invite over dozens of ladies?
So my mother-in-law and her husband live in Boca Raton, Florida, where the average person is a 65-year-old Jew. And so my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, that's what they are, and that's what all their friends are. And my mother-in-law decided, like, we were coming to Florida for a week. And by the way, I'm back in New Jersey by myself right now, but my wife and kids
Back to work for a day.
I came back to escape. Anyway, so my mother-in-law informed us that on Sunday she was going to invite every single person she's ever met because they need to see the grandkids. You know, like, cue that voice in Seinfeld. You got
to
see the baby.
You have no, like, do you have no power in this? Like, I would have straight up, like, rejected this.
I do have power. I said, that's not happening. It's the NFC Championship game if the Vikings are going to be in it. And if it is happening, it's fine. I'll go to Steen's house. And so my wife said, I'll take care of it. And she said, what hours are you unavailable? And I said, starting at 6 p.m. And she said, okay, they're going to come from 2 to 4 p.m. And I said, perfect. Totally perfect.
No offense to your three sons. Like, who wants to see anyone's kids? Anybody who wants to see someone's kids is a freaking creep.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Totally agree.
Like, why do you want to see kids? I've seen kids. I don't, like, my...
No, obviously, you're obviously correct. So my mother-in-law goes into that mode, like my dad gets into it also. You know, like when, like, you're hosting a huge party and you start freaking out and you got to clean the whole house and cook everything. And my mother-in-law, and I'm like getting a little bit nervous because I'm like, there's a lot of action and I don't know why this much action is coming for a couple of yentas to come by at 2 o'clock in the afternoon for an hour. And then Jen says to me, I got to warn you, plans have changed a little bit.
Oh boy.
People are coming at 6 p.m. And I said, how many people? And she said, a few, but not that many. And then my father-in-law walks in holding bags and bags of groceries. And he's like, I just spent over $200 in meat. And I'm like, why? And he said, well, we have at least 24 people coming. I'm like, what? So 24 different couples were invited. And that's not including the fact that some of them brought, like, you know, the husband and the wife. And I mean, it was out of control how many people were in this house. And so everybody promised that I could stay in my one room and the door would be shut and nobody would come in there. But the problem is, like, I'd have to leave the room to urinate and, like, stuff like that, you know?
Mm.
So it was not a pleasant experience. What I ended up doing, the room I was watching. By the way, I hope my in-laws don't hear this, but the room I was in had a porch, and so I was just peeing in the porch.
Listen.
I wasn't going to wade through those yentas, I'm telling you.
No, you can't wade through the yentas.
Yeah. So it was a miserable experience. And by the way, if the Vikings win, I'm all cheers and I'm happy and, you know, guffawing it up with the
Yentas. Were there any Yentas left when the game was over?
That's the worst part. They were there until midnight. I thought these people go to sleep at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's, you know what?
By the way, they weren't here for my kids because my kids went to sleep at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was like, and that's the part that was the worst because I had nowhere to go and be sad and stuff.
Yeah. So, no. And no one, and like no one in Florida, like, actually cares about football. It wasn't like people were like, well, yeah, I can empathize with you. Because...
Yeah. I love my in-laws. I wish they had picked it a different day.
Anyway. Yeah, or like moved to a different state.
All right. So number 12 on my ballot is a guy who will make it this year, without a doubt. And I realize I'm on the wrong side of this, of, like, you know, the young progressive fans on this one, that I don't have him as a no questioner. But that's Vlad Guerrero.
Yeah, obviously 94.6. He's sailing in.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, but I think you're just underestimating him. Make the case why you know, what are the warts on his resume?
Okay. Wart number one is that his career WAR starts with a 5. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't even crack 60 WAR, why are you in the conversation here? And it's not like, well, he was really good on defense and that's not reflected or something. Like, he was a hitter. That's all he was. He was a straight hitter. And he was a worse hitter than Edgar Martinez. He was a worse hitter than Larry Walker. He's a worse hitter than Gary Sheffield.
I mean, very similar to Andrew Jones. His last relevant season really is 32. He's okay at 33, and then he has three more.
Yeah, that contract for the Angels was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Jonah Carey and like these Expos like myth makers like drive so much of like the progressive Hall of Fame conversation. Like, people became obsessed with Tim Raines, and now people are obsessed with Vlad Guerrero and Larry Walker also.
Yeah, Vlad also did not hit in the playoffs.
Yeah. So to me, Vlad is like, if you want to put him in, that's fine. But the fact that he's cruising in on a second try is a little bit, to me, like, you know, whatever. There's more deserving guys.
One MVP, and he's in the conversation five or six different times in the top six. All right, I hear what you're saying. Listen, these are longevity guys. Andrew Jones, Vlad Guerrero, like, if they were compilers, then they'd be in. But they were irrelevant by the time they were 35.
Yeah. All right. Number 11 on my list, one spot ahead of Vlad, is a guy who's not getting any attention. In fact, the next three guys, none of them are getting any attention. That's Jeff Kent.
Yeah, Jeff Kent has...
A douchebag on Survivor.
Yeah. Fifth. Yeah. I listen, I don't have to make the same point 3 years in a row. Yeah.
Well, I'm doing it. 12.3%.
fifth year, so he's you know, had plenty of time to gain momentum.
The going nowhere that, fast.
Yeah, yeah, nowhere fast. He's never going to get above 30 or 40. I do think there will be a referendum on him in like year 10, but it'll be far too late.
No, I mean, here's the thing. To me, he's similar to Guerrero. He wasn't a great defensive second baseman by any stretch of the imagination, but there's a lot of added value if you're playing second and hitting like that instead of, if you know.
Yeah, and listen, second baseman historically aged, I think, the worst of any position. I do. Yeah. The thing is, this, like, if you want to go by the old school test, like when you were playing Vlad Guerrero and when you were playing Jeff Kent, if you had turned to the opposing managers, like, hey, is that guy Hall of Famer? They would have said yes.
They would have said yes to Jeff Kent?
Yeah. Like in Jeff Kent's prime, for sure, no question.
Yeah, well, he won that MVP because everybody didn't like Barry Bonds.
He was the best player on his team, which was a problem, but, you know, he was great.
All right, number 10 on my ballot is Larry Walker. You know, Larry Walker, why? I don't understand why Vlad Guerrero is at 90% in the vote and Larry Walker is, you know, stuck in the 20s.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. The push for Larry Walker, it's not going to happen. He made a massive jump this year. Again, he was the biggest beneficiary of the ballot cleaning out a little bit. He went from 21 to 40.
Explain to me why he is so far worse than Vlad Guerrero. He was a better hitter.
I think people don't know what to do with his numbers, partially because of Coors.
Okay, his OPS plus is better than Vlad Guerrero's. They're 141 to 140. It's basically the same.
No, but,
he was a great fielder, right? He was a good base runner. Like, he was a more excellent all-around player. Yeah. He's got 73 career WAR.
Steals.
Like, to me, like, you got to hit 60 to get in the conversation, and if you hit 70, you're a no-brainer. He hit 70.
I think the 400 home runs thing hurts him with the old-school guys for sure. He doesn't even have 400 home runs.
He has a 400 on base percentage.
Ages well, but also the difference between him and someone like Vlad is, like, Vlad's, when he played 158 games or more every year. Larry Walker has a 153, and that's it. So he missed so many games every year. That's probably what's keeping him out. I mean, 133, 137, 138, 103, 131. He is injured every single season of his entire
Hold on.
Career.
First of all, two of those years, there was a strike, so there were fewer games played. And that was right in his prime. Like,
I mean, so he has two immortal years. And in 97, he hits 366 with 49 home runs. You know, almost a walk to a strikeout. Just absolutely ludicrous. And he steals 33 bases. The next year, he hits 363, and then the year after that, he hits 379, slugs 710, 37 homers. I mean, just insane stuff.
And by the way, you look at his home road splits, obviously playing Colorado helped, but he was not Dante Pichette, okay? Or Vinny Castilla. So I think he should make it ahead of Vlad Guerrero, but
he's similar. He has one MVP, but he got no respect. He only has two other finishes better than 10th. So even when he was playing, he was sort of disrespected.
Yeah. All right. Number 9 on my ballot is, to me, the scariest batter that, at least against the Twins. You know, obviously Barry Bonds didn't play against the Twins. Gary Sheffield, the way that he shook that bat when he was on, you know, scared the living hell out of me. Gary Sheffield probably among the most, like, dislikable guys, right? Tremendous asshole. openly made errors in the field on Milwaukee to get, you know, to be traded, and, you know, never tried on defense at all.
He's a little bit of Vince Carter. He's like Vince Carter.
Yeah, I mean, but people like Vince Carter.
Yeah. So Sheffield's under 10% right now. He won't get knocked off the ballot, but he's never going to get a push because people don't like him. There will never be a push for Sheffield.
Yeah, and by the way, to me, Sheffield and Vlad Guerrero, again, like, those are the same guy. What's the difference between Gary Sheffield and Vlad Guerrero other than everybody likes one?
People like you, and, you know, Sheffield, Sheffield's going to, what team is his hypothetical Hall of Fame bust going to be with?
Yeah,
you know?
Their WAR is identical, their JAWS is identical, their OPS plus is identical. Like, these are really identical players in so many ways. You know, Sheffield, you know, has a higher on-base percentage. You know, Guerrero has a higher slugging. Anyway, all right. To me, there's eight players on this ballot who, if you don't vote for them, you don't deserve a ballot anymore. There's eight guys who there's no debate. All the guys we said, like from Sheffield through Hoffman, you can make an argument one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
There's eight guys who you cannot make an argument. There's no nitpicking. All right. And that starts with number eight, who is on the ballot for the first time and will not make the Hall of Fame, and it's a disgrace. And that's Scott Rolen.
Yeah, so Rolen started off I do think that he will get his referendum. He'll get his day in the sun. I don't know when it'll be. He's at 11.8%. I think he will. The thing Rolen has going for him is he will get. I think he'll play okay to the old school guys. And by the way, the old school guys are being weeded out a little bit because they are getting rid of guys who don't actually.
Yeah, so I disagree with you a lot about that. The old school guys only care about home runs and RBIs. They don't care about defensive contribution. And
I agree with that. But I think once they see Rolen in the 50s, if that does happen, once you see him rolling, then I think they'll like, oh, well, this guy was good. Let me vote for him.
Third base is far and away the least represented position in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge problem. And the reason is because third basemen are sort of half of a first baseman and half of a shortstop, right? But because if they don't have the same numbers as first baseman, they don't end up in the Hall of Fame. So you have this, like, absurd scenario. Like, I mean, you know, Chipper Jones, like, I have Scott Rolen as the number eight third baseman of all time. It would be unconscionable for a top 10 first baseman to not make it, right?
Mm-hmm.
David Wright, by the way, I have him as a Hall of Famer. He's not going to make it.
Well, no.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's a lot of third basemen who deserve. Adrian Beltre, fortunately, will, just because he played so long that he, you know, eventually.
Yeah, I think Beltre was like an obvious no, and now has like turned himself into a probably yes.
So to me, Scott Rolen should be in the Hall of Fame. He is one of the greatest third basemen of all time defensively. Any Eagles fans who are mad at me for the first half of this podcast, which would be understandable, you know, there's my Philly love. Scott Rolen should be in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Who's number seven?
I'm going backwards. Eagles fans, listen, I'm not being a sore loser. I'm saying this for your own benefit. Like, don't get your hopes that high. I saw the Giants do this in 2000. I saw Kerry Collins light up the Vikings, and I lived in New York at the time, and I heard all my idiot Giants friends convinced that they were going to win the Super Bowl. Oh, look how we destroyed the Vikings. Like, you had an amazing game yesterday, but remember who it was against. Mm-hmm. All right, number seven, Manny Ramirez, you know, just insane hitter, and that's all there is.
Yeah, Manny's in the weirdest position, like, you know, percentage-wise of anyone on the ballot. He's at 24.1. I think the positive tests are just, you know, it's too much to overcome for him, probably.
Yeah, you mean the positive tests of the steroids, yeah. But his career OPS is .996. It's ridiculous.
No, he was amazing. I don't think we're debating whether he was good. I think we're debating whether
the weird thing about him is he's a guy who hit like crazy in an era where all that mattered, you know, for MVP consideration was those numbers. You know, Justin Morneau won one over, you know, Maurer and Santana. He played on a team that was as high profile a team as there was, that won 95 games a year, two teams actually, Cleveland and then Boston, and yet he never got close to winning an MVP, which is really weird.
Yeah, it is
so
strange.
Yeah, I don't know what that's about. But so to me, number seven, Manny Ramirez, has to be in the Hall of Fame. And if you don't,
I
vote
agree.
For him,
but I also totally get why someone wouldn't vote for him.
You mean because of steroids?
Yeah, like if you think he cheated, I totally respect not voting for him because there's proof. Unlike Bonds and Clemens, who I think you have to vote.
So you respect people who won't vote for somebody who took steroids?
I don't respect it. I would. He's on my ballot. I would obviously vote for him.
Respect people who? I mean, what about all the guys who took greenies and everything else? I mean,
no. Listen. Yeah. But then it was illegal, and then he got caught.
All right. Okay. All right.
Whereas Bonds
six,
and Clemens didn't, and plus it wasn't actually banned when they did whatever they did.
Number six to me is a guy who's getting close. He's not going to make it this year, but I think he will make it before he's off the ballot, and that's Mike Mussina.
Yeah, Mussina's doing really well this year. He's at 71.4, so he's an absolute lock to make it in the next couple of years.
But yeah, but he won't. I think my prediction was 2020. I think I'm going to move it up to 2019 because he's doing really well this year.
Well, you mean next year?
I think he makes it next year. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
Yeah. All right. Number five. Just a despicable person, but he has to be in the Hall of Fame, Curt Schilling.
Yeah, Curt Schilling is all, he's behind he really needs Mussina to get in, and then he'll get in the next year. That's what's going to happen. When they're not together on the ballot, Schilling sails in. He's awful, but it doesn't bother me that he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of bad people in the Hall of Fame. All right, number four to me is a guy that he's the opposite of Schilling. This is a guy that everybody loves, and he's going to cruise in on the first ballot undeservedly. To the extent, look, obviously, if you're a Hall of Famer on one ballot, you're a Hall of Famer on another ballot. But what I just mean is, like, it's a little bit ridiculous to me how Jim Tomei's making it so easily. I love Jim Tomei. He was only in the Twins for 2 years. He played most of his career in our division on other teams, and yet I still love him. He was my favorite Twin those 2 years. But Jim Tomei's very good, but he shouldn't be, like, as
unanimous
as he is.
It's weird how, and again, this is the softest ballot in about 7 or 8 years, at least. That being said, it's weird that his number. I think
how is this a soft ballot when we named like 16 guys who should be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, no, Tomei should be in there, but I'm surprised he's ahead of those guys. I didn't think he would be, and he's sailing in with like you know what? It's just the home run totals. People love him.
Yeah.
If you have a high home run total and you do not have like a major steroid suspicion, you get in.
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Sosa had as many home runs as Jim Tomei, but yeah. Okay. Number three is probably should be unanimous this year. Chipper Jones. You hate him as a Mets fan.
Chipper's doing incredibly well. A few people did leave him off their ballot, but he's at 98.5. He'll be in the 90s. And I hate him, but listen, I respect that he.
And then listen, the top two
really
spots go to the.
He's also not a great guy in real life.
Yeah. The top two spots go to the greatest hitter and greatest pitcher of the last 100 years. And,
I mean,
they're assholes and they're
cheaters.
This
whole exercise is futile until they get in. I don't think they're ever going to get in because I just think the people who aren't voting for him are very well aware of how good they were and don't care. 64%, they're dead even this year. They're barely trending up. So let's see the total. The total of votes they've gained is relatively negligible. That's the only thing you look at, right? Votes of people who voted so far, who voted last year, how many they've gained, it's not that many.
Yeah, people's minds are made up.
Listen, they're going to crawl. Listen, they have 4 more years. They're going to keep crawling. They're never going to dip down. I think 75 is a high number. I think they maybe could get to 70. I think it's super hard to get to 75 like that.
Well, I mean, when Joe Morgan came out with that letter, I think that's the Hall of Fame putting their foot down.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame clearly doesn't want it. Obviously, they let him send out that letter. Even some of the old school guys were annoyed by that.
There's a backlash to the letter?
I saw some old school guys who said that did not factor in their voting at all. That will factor in the nerds who don't reveal their ballot. Imagine having a Hall of Fame ballot and like not thinking like, ooh, this would be a cool article or a blog to write, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Now imagine like literally half the populace does that. And you basically think about who you're dealing with.
I mean, we don't have a ballot and we discuss our ballot anyways if we do. So,
right. And maybe it's less cool if you have one. But the people who don't reveal their ballots are
well, what Lebatard did was great. And then the holier than thou attitude of the Hall of Fame was gross, but predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so this was a podcast. In conclusion, to the people of Philadelphia, you should know that your team, your fans are discussing hooligans. Your team got lucky in that they faced the cursed Vikings, and your former third baseman should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and you're going to win the Super Bowl. Congratulations. Next week, we will either talk Royal Rumble and or have a
skeleton.
Olympian on.
Skeleton. Isn't it a skeleton? Guy. Yeah.
Skeleton. They go head first. It's very
skeleton,
dangerous.
A skeleton.
It makes me nervous for them every time I watch.
Skeletonian.
So I asked. So I've had like these like hour long talks with like an expert in each sport because I've never covered the Winter Olympics before, so I don't know it as well. And I asked him that, and he said a lot of people call them Skeletors, but that's not official.
Skeletors. What about Skellies? Skellies. Skellists.
I didn't. I don't think
Skulls?
I don't think I used any word in my. preview for them. I had, like, skeleton was the one sport because there's only two events. There's a men's and a women's. There's not, like, doubles or anything like that. So it was, like, I had the most over, like, unused anecdotes for skeleton of any sport I've ever had.
All right, well, let's not spoil.
So if you want to just, like, ask me, like, about, like, the 13th best skeleton guy. There's a Jerry Rice and a John Daly.
There's a guy named Jerry Rice who skeletons?
Yeah, and there's a guy named John Daly.
Yeah, and I assume they don't look like Jerry Rice and John Daly.
I mean, I haven't even seen pictures of them. John Daly's American. Jerry Rice is, I think, British.
No, not bad. British Jerry Rice. All right, Keith, I will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. My knees fail. My brain fails. Words fail. Crusted with tears, catatonic and raw, I go downstairs and outside and you still get mail. A week after you died, a package with your name on it came, and inside was a gift for our daughter you had ordered in secret and collapsed there on the front steps. I wailed. A backpack for when she goes to school a couple years from now. You were thinking ahead to a future you must have known deep down would not include you. Though you clawed at the cliff you were sliding down, being swallowed into a silence that's bottomless and real. It's dumb, and I don't wanna learn anything. Love you.